Hey everybody, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're using. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. If you have questions, comments, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe again. Dave, let's see. It's getting late September. It's September 25th, three months till Christmas. You know, that's my favorite holiday.
Of course.
It's still warm up here in New England. How's it going down there?
It's actually getting cool down here. We're doing the Not One More Vet Race Around the World race. Mm-hmm. And this week was like the first time that I was able to run when it wasn't like 85 degrees plus. So
yeah.
As much as I hate the cold, I'm enjoying running in cooler weather.
I've been
doing a lot better with running when it's cooler.
So nice.
How are things going up there? I know you just got back from California.
Yeah. We were out in California for a week trying to get jobs lined up, housing lined up for when we move out there.
Moving is the worst. It's the absolute worst.
Yeah. So I'm excited to get back home to friends and family. Certainly going to miss New England, but excited for what's coming ahead. But it was amazing just being gone a week, driving home from the airport yesterday, how much the colors are starting to pop up here. Yeah. It's still warm today. It's still like 80, but it's supposed to really fall off a cliff next week. So we'll see. But anyway, thanks. You know, we've had some good news this week, right? We hit 25,000 downloads. Yeah. That's pretty amazing. So thank you.
Every time we get to that, we're like, we never thought we'd get. We get to 1,000.
I know, right? I know. So thank you to everybody that listens. Thank you to all our guests. We've got another awesome guest today. We're super excited about. So just thanks for all the support. And we get messages pretty regularly. Everybody out there listening that hears this, thank you so much for your support. We kind of started a new thing on social media this week, the Vet Tech Cafe Cork Board. And basically, we're just going to kind of use that as a post to post state association updates, things with conferences. IVEX put out a call for presenters this past week. So we'll put that up there. And just trying to keep, you know, things going and keep trying to, you know, get word out about different things that are going on in our profession and use our microphone a little bit more for some of that stuff. So,
well, in true cafe lingo, we're probably going to have advertisements for people that want to take guitar lessons and posting our own mic nights and things
yes.
like that.
Yes. Yes. Actually, you dropped a little hint there. That's our next fun thing that's coming is open mic night. So we'll be talking about that more in the future as we kind of pull some of that stuff together, but super fun. So, and you kind of already mentioned the Not One More Vet race. How are you doing on your miles and stuff?
I made it to a third of the way through, and we still have seven more weeks left.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm doing pretty good. I'm staying on pace. Some people are messaging me to make sure that I stay on pace. So I am getting out there and doing that. The weekend's coming up, so I'm planning on getting a good probably 10 miles in this weekend. So I'm hoping to knock down some of those miles and get through it.
Yeah, for sure.
How are you doing with your cycling?
Well, I started off okay. I mean, of course, being gone last week, I didn't get anything done last week. I did some a little bit earlier in the week. But now I actually don't have any scheduled shifts at work really anymore. I plan to still work some, but I have to wait a couple of days and then go have two negative COVID tests for work, like a couple of days apart. So I'm doing that next week. So I still have all of next week off regardless. So so I'll be able to get some good miles down next week. And Molly's got a couple of days off. So we'll take some rides
in between packing and all that.
Yes. Yeah. And then we really got to start hitting all that good stuff. Yeah. So, well, what do you think? Should we go ahead and get started? Man, I'm so excited for today. I can't wait. So today we have Brandi Halua coming by the Vet Tech Cafe. Really, really excited. She's been in the veterinary field since 1995. She's worked in zoos and private practice, emergency and critical care, and other specialty clinics. She's done adjunct stuff and worked for vet tech programs, lectured at conferences, all kinds of stuff, and most recently as a contractor for a local veterinary school. She's been credentialed veterinary technician since 2002 and a VTS emergency and critical care since 2012. In 2016, she decided to change career paths and has worked in libraries since 2017, and that's largely what we're going to talk about today. She will complete her master's degree in library and information science from San Jose State in 8 months, and currently works for the State of Arizona Research Library, a division of the Arizona Secretary Secretary of State as the Discovery Librarian, where she's responsible for social media content, digitization workflows, metadata, and digital asset management. And for those of you that might not be aware, Brandy was very instrumental in our path to our VTS, making up one half of, some people refer to the infamous combo of biz, Brandy Halua and Liz Houston. And, Liz, yeah. And you know, Liz was our first guest on the show. We're going to have her back on a little bit later on, but it's really cool to have Liz as our first guest and Brandy kind of bookend year one as our last guest, you know, two women that were so special to our careers. So without further ado, Brandy, thank you so much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today. Can we get you a cup of coffee?
No. I am not a caffeine drinker and I have never been a coffee drinker.
Wow.
So yeah, all those nights in the ER and not an ounce of caffeine.
And you managed to stay away. Well, at least a water or a ginger ale or something.
I will have a tea.
Okay.
And my sister recently got me hooked on chai tea, which I realize has some caffeine in it, but that's what I'm going to have with a little bit of cream in it.
So, All right. We can put that together.
We can make that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we kind of always start out with our guests with taking us kind of through their career path. So if you don't mind taking a few minutes and start there and we'll kind of go from there.
Absolutely. Thanks, first of all, both of you for having me on. I miss you guys so much. And all of my colleagues in VetMed, I miss everybody. This COVID stuff has really, you know, upended everything. So I'm very excited to be here to chat with you guys. I started in the veterinary field in 1995, and that was not my original career plan. As most of your guests have mentioned, I was going to do sports medicine, maybe some physical therapy type stuff, and quickly realized I didn't want to touch people. I shadowed one day at like a facility to see what it was like, and I was like, no, this isn't going to be for me. So I went away to college for a couple semesters, and I'm not sure if you guys remember the show, I think it was called Emergency 911.
Yes.
Where they
they
reenacted like 911 phone calls. And it was fascinating. But one of the episodes was about an emergency clinic for animals. And I was like, what? Like, that's crazy. I had no idea that was a thing that existed because we did not have pets as a kid growing up. We were not allowed to have animals. The closest I got was I think I got to bring our classroom guinea pig home in fourth grade for 2 weeks over Christmas.
I had that same thing. I was allowed to have goldfish, but that was about it.
Oh. Yeah, like we just weren't, you know, my mom had four kids. She was busy, didn't have time to take care of pets as well. So that show really caught my attention because it was very fast paced. There were snakes, there were dogs, there were all sorts of animals, and it was not a career I had even realized existed. So then I thought, well, maybe I should do vet school because medicine was always kind of interesting to me, but I never really thought about going to med school or nursing school. That just wasn't a thing I had considered, especially after realizing I didn't want to touch people. So I came back from school and shadowed at very small, regular day practice. And that kind of caught my attention. And in the meantime, had picked up a shift at a local private zoo. And it no longer exists for very good reasons. But it at least got my foot in the door with experience handling animals, being around animals. I did also work in my young days at a pet store as the kennel assistant, and that's really where vet med specifically became an interest to me. We had all these puppies in there, and yes, originally it was a puppy mill store, but while I was there, they did switch over to adopting out dogs from the Humane Society, and that was 20-some years ago before that was kind of a cool thing to do.
Wow.
So, you know, these puppies are coming in with luxating patellas and giardia and parvo, and I didn't know what any of that was. And so I would come home at night and study it. I would get books from the library because this was pre-internet days and just figure out what all of that stuff was that I was seeing. And that kind of sparked the bug in being more, you know, on the technical side of veterinary practice. I never really had a big interest in going to vet school. So from there, I went to general practices and had a lot of experience in those. And all of that was while I was in the Midwest. And then I moved to Phoenix in 2000 and worked for some general practices here. And one of the doctors I worked for also did relief at the emergency clinic. And she was like, you would be great. You should work some shifts there.
the ER bug.
Yes. So I was terrified. I was like, I know my stuff in a general practice, but like GDVs and like bleeding arteries and stuff, like that's terrifying to me. But she's like, you'll be great at it. I remember like the second shift we were doing CPR and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like it was so scary. But everyone there was great. There were some really good doctors. I made some really good technician friends that I still to this day, you know, keep in touch with. And from there, it just turned into full-time work. And yeah, around 2014, I switched over to teaching and got out of clinical practice and taught for a local for-profit that went out of business. Mm-hmm. And then also taught for Penn Foster, doing some of their webinar series, which was a lot of fun. Yeah, and then I decided in 2016, I just needed to get out of it. I needed to do something else, and so I did.
Okay. You know, you talk about the for-profit school. You don't have to get into any specifics, but I taught at one as well before I left California. And maybe after a year or two after I got to New England, they went bankrupt or out of business. I think that was like a lack of cash is something along those lines. But anyway, it was for the students, what that meant was they showed up to school one day and there was a sign on the door that the school was closed. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. That was thankfully somebody bought it and was able to like pick it up and pick up the pieces and the students were able to continue. But I remember thinking to myself then like, I couldn't imagine that scenario and like still being employed there or going to school there or any of that. But holy cow. And that's not the only one, or those aren't the only two that I know that that's happened to. It's wild.
Right. And I could see the writing on the wall before they actually closed. I was adjunct there. So I worked, I taught like one class.
It's like a side hustle.
Yes. Yeah. Cause I was still working in clinical practice too. So I would go in there and, you know, prepare lessons, and it's not conducive for the instructors at all, how much time you have to do any of that stuff. A lot of it was done on my own time at home. But when I would come in, the, you know, staff would be like, oh, we had to bring our own toilet paper in, we had to bring our own paper towel. They just weren't paying for that stuff. And then the next time I came in, they were like, oh, we haven't gotten a paycheck. And I was like, oh, I'm good. Like if you're not in that, and like, because I had as adjunct, you could skip a semester and then come back. It's not even a semester. It's a 4-week block. And I think during that time I was like, that might've been when we got married. Got married. And so when we came back, they had to redo all of my computer access and they didn't have it ready. And I was supposed to teach in like 5 minutes and I didn't have a room. I didn't have a computer. Oh, I didn't have any. So I was like, I'm good, guys. Like, sorry, but if you're not going to pay me, it's like, this place is going under. And sure enough, like 2 weeks later, students showed up and there was the door locked.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm also teaching at a for-profit school now, and I don't think we're having any of those problems at this point. But you know, with COVID going on, that is something that's on my mind of like, how much longer is this gonna last like this?
Yeah, and I think when people aren't working, they're looking at what else they could maybe be doing. I know my brother-in-law is doing that same thing right now. He just recently moved in with us and is going to start culinary school on Monday. You know, because he
at least your meals are going to be made now.
Heck yeah,
that's awesome.
Yes, exactly.
Thinking back to your career, I realize you're out of the veterinary technician role right now, but what did you love about it? Like, what kept you in the field while you were doing it? And what's one thing that you really miss about it?
I stayed because the medicine is fascinating to me. The ability to recognize, you know, that this set of symptoms is going to result in the need for XYZ treatments, and to be able to pre-anticipate what the doctor may need or what is going to happen to this patient. That was the stuff that kept me coming back. And it was different every day. You know, you had to have all those skills sharp all the time because you might need that ability to do what this skill tomorrow.
And did you find that to be more true in emergency medicine than anywhere else?
Definitely.
Yeah, because I feel that way too. Whereas thinking back to my general practice days, as technicians, we weren't really expected to know any of that stuff. But as emergency technicians, we were expected to be on top of that.
Right. I mean, there were a few things in general practice that we were expected to know a little bit more about. Like one of us might be the go-to person to teach a client how to give sub-Q fluids and have the diabetes chat. But yeah, those days were so prescribed. You know, we saw appointments until 10 and then we started surgeries. And then from, you know, 2 to 5, you were discharging. It was the same every day other than the random emergency that came in.
And what do you miss about it? Now that you've been out of the field for, gosh, what is that, 6 years now?
At least clinical practice. Because I was teaching up until about 2017 or 2018, I think.
So what do you miss about it?
I miss my colleagues, for sure. I do miss, you know, having hands-on patients and working my knowledge around the cases that come in, because I don't use any of that anymore. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about the ability to just reach deep and be able to explain whatever it was that I was explaining. I was like, it is still in there. It just takes a lot longer to pull it up.
Yeah.
But other than that, to be honest, I don't miss much of it. And I have a lot of guilt. I shouldn't say a lot. I have guilt about it, a lot more so when I first left, because I did feel like I was abandoning, you know, you guys and all of my peeps that we like to call them. You know,
I
felt like I was abandoning Liz and I was abandoning you guys and everyone from the study group and my sister. I mean, one of the greatest things about this career for me was that my youngest sister decided to come along for the ride and just passed her VTS in neurology. She got pinned earlier this year.
Awesome.
That's great.
So, you know, I felt like I was letting her down. She finally catches up to me and I'm like, see ya. Enjoy this profession I can't stand anymore or whatever. But so that part I have a little bit of guilt about. But the further out I go from clinical practice, the less I miss it.
That's interesting. You say the guilt. I mean, Dave and I, the whole reason we started this podcast was because we were kind of at career crossroads, the both of us. And, you know, I've certainly thought about doing something different, but I've never actually thought about guilt about leaving it behind. But that's, that makes complete sense.
For me, it wasn't really guilt about leaving things behind. It was more about I've put so much time and effort into this profession.
Yeah.
It did make sense. It never made sense to me to say, well, I'm just going to do something different and ignore the last 20 years that I've worked for where I'm at.
Yeah.
Guilt was never really one of the things that kept me in the field. But now that you mention that, I would feel guilty.
Yeah.
Well, especially now that we have this going on, like, I would feel guilty just saying, bye, everybody.
Yeah. when kind of in there, did you kind of start to notice yourself realizing that it was time for a career change?
I would say for sure 2016 is when I made the decision to kind of leave the profession as my full-time job, whether it was teaching or in practice. You know, I hadn't been in a practice since 2014 anyway. And so even just the teaching aspect of it, I started to feel like I wasn't the right person for that anymore because I wasn't in practice. I didn't have new cases to share. I was repeating, you know, some of the same stuff over and over again. And since I wasn't in practice, I was missing out on, you know, the new drugs that are coming out and, you know, that kind of thing. So I didn't feel like I was the right person to be teaching that stuff. I think in general, it's been an accumulation of experiences that I've had throughout the 25 or whatever years it is now. It just felt at the time like the universe was telling me in several different ways that I should look into something else. Some of that was the election.
Okay.
In 2016, I wasn't, you know, super political before that, but that felt like a very important election that affected me deeply and still does and causes me a lot of concern about what could be. And I wasn't going to be able to change that by working in vet medicine.
Gotcha.
I felt like it was more important for me to try and help people find information to prevent all the false information that exists out there and help make sure people understood that government documents are available for everyone for free. And a lot of it is online, right? Like that felt more like a path I needed to follow than, you know, how many IV catheters can I place without, you know, buggering them up.
Right.
And then, as you guys know, in 2015, it was pretty rough for me. So for those that don't know, in 2015, at the age of 38, I found a lump in my left breast. And it was actually, Dave, I don't know if you realize this.
I do realize it. I 100% realize it. And I think about it every time I think of you.
So Dave had me come out to lecture at the New Hampshire Veterinary Technician Association meeting in May of 2015. And I rushed home because I was going to finally get to see my husband, who had been gone for 2 weeks. And that night, after I got home from that lecture, I found the lump. And I'm lucky that I have really good medical insurance and was able to have my primary care doctor have a look at it, and a mammogram and an ultrasound in less than 12 hours from when I felt the lump. So I felt very lucky about that. And I think some of it is, right, like I've touched a lot of lumps in my days. On dogs. And so, and cats. I knew that this wasn't like no big woo. I knew this was going to be something serious. And it was. I ended up having to have a single, I chose to have a single mastectomy. And during that surgery, they did find out that it had spread to several lymph nodes. And so I had to have lymph nodes removed from my left armpit. And that has resulted in some issues with edema in my left arm. It's not too bad. But I also had to undergo chemotherapy for 4 months and radiation for about 6 weeks. So that was a pretty rough year. And to be honest, at this point, I couldn't imagine going through all of that and working in a practice at the same time. I was lucky to have a job working from home at that time that afforded me the ability to work around my treatment schedule.
Gotcha.
So that also was an eye-opener because I've done genetic testing twice. Cancer was not a thing in our family at all. And it's not a genetic thing. Obviously, there's genes that we have no idea about yet.
Right.
But if it's not genetic, then what is it? And it has to be environmental. And then where have I spent most of my time in my adult years? And it was in veterinary clinics. And 100% there have been times when I was exposed to things, especially in my early days when I didn't know any better, that we know now are cancer-causing.
Right.
Well, and for those of you that aren't Facebook friends with Brandy, that year, like your teaching, just following your Facebook post, like you were giving daily or weekly lectures on what breast cancer is, how things get fixed, and just giving a like opening yourself up to the entire ordeal and the entire experience to put a face to it and to put a person behind it instead of just talking breast cancer as a vague problem
as a way to raise money.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure when this will air, but October, you know, is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And for the majority of us that have experienced it, it's not exactly like an exciting month.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we are well aware.
Well, this will post on October 4th. So it will be in that month.
Wow.
So then that leads me to, ladies, please make sure that you second base yourself.
I remember those hashtags.
I was not that great about doing it. And when I found the mass, I was so mad at myself because I was like, how did I miss this? Like, it's not small. So definitely, you know, everyone should be checked. I mean, men too, because men can get it. It's just not as common. But luckily, I'm doing well. I'm still going to be on medication for probably another 3 or 4 years that does cause me some side effects when it comes to my joints. So again, like the idea of standing up for a 12-hour shift just doesn't even seem like it would be possible.
Wow.
So that was a big driving force also.
So when you think kind of back to this time, you know, obviously there's a lot going on there. How, and you're thinking about going into a different career, kind of coming back from that, how hard was it for you to actually like take that step to look for a different job, to like, you know, again,
a different career.
Yeah, different career. Yeah. Like leave veterinary medicine behind and go in a different direction. How, like, was that mentally challenging, or was it like, actually, no, this feels right, and this is what I want to do, and I'm going for it.
I think in the back of my head, I'd always wondered if, like, librarianship was a path I should have chosen. But again, you know, growing up, like, who wants to be a librarian? Like, that's not a job that, you know, when you ask a kid, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? No one says that. Maybe more so now. But so it wasn't even really a career path I acknowledged existed. But as I grew older and recognized that the things that I really enjoyed doing in my time off, like reading, like talking about books with other people, sharing information, you know, working on blogs and things like that, were really skills that are developed during library school. And I didn't have a bachelor's degree at the time. I just had my associates in my vet tech program. So what I decided was to go back and finish my bachelor's degree. I had credits from like 1,000 different schools where I would go take 2 or 3 semesters of something and then life would get in the way. And I was lucky and found that the University of Nebraska, Omaha, had a bachelor's program in library science.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting degree because it's actually a bachelor's in multidisciplinary studies, which sounds more like I had no idea what I wanted to study. So I studied all the things and they turn it into a degree.
Gotcha.
So it's not really called a minor in library science, but it's something like that, like a focus on library science. And so they took all of my vet tech classes. They took all of the classes I took right out of high school. It was amazing. I didn't have to retake math. I didn't have to retake, you know, biology or any of that stuff. And so really at the end of it, I only had, I think it was 4 or 5 semesters to complete. And I was like, well, I can do this. And that gave me the opportunity to also decide if I enjoyed the librarian aspect of the program. And I absolutely loved it. And one of the women that taught the classes, we really hit it off, and she was a huge help in transitioning from vet med to librarianship. And then in what I feel is true fashion for myself, because I wasn't really working full-time at that point and was just teaching part-time with Penn Foster, I had time on my hands. And so I decided to volunteer at as many places as I possibly could to see where in librarianship I enjoyed being. So I spent time at our big central public library reshelving books, which is amazing. Like just walking around and putting things back where they belong.
Any of you that have OCD tendencies, is good
for you. Or just good with organization. Yeah. Or...
yes, exactly. It also was kind of interesting because you're putting books away that have been used by patrons. And so you get a feel for what people are looking at in time. So I remember putting books away, like several books about medical school. I'm like, oh, that's neat. Like somebody was in here investigating what it would take to go to medical school. And then you put a bunch of books away about dinosaurs. Like it just, it was kind of a neat little snapshot of what was happening in the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then I also volunteered at our state capitol. And that was a little more intimidating to me because it's the center of politics here in Arizona.
Yeah. Right.
But that was also part of why I wanted to switch was, you know, the election in 2016. And, you know, if I'm going to make a difference in that regards, then I need to be where the action is. And so our state capitol also has a museum. So I volunteered for the museum and they have the state library, basically. We can't call it the Arizona State Library because then everyone thinks we're part of ASU.
Part of yeah. Yeah.
So that is why it's called the State of Arizona Research Library. And I started volunteering there mostly because I knew I had an internship coming up and I wanted to kind of insert myself in to make it easy to transition to that. And that's exactly what happened. And then partway through my internship, a position opened up and that was offered to me. So it was super easy, a lot easier than I thought it would be to make that switch.
Mm. Got it. One real quick thing in there. You know, you said, sounds like you were doing a lot of volunteering at a lot of different places. And we've had a couple of different people along the way that when they, whether, you know, mostly in vet med, but when they've been looking at going into a different area of the profession. I think of what Mark was saying about going into zoo med, you know, volunteering one day a week at the zoo or what have you. Mm-hmm. Like anybody that's considering this, you have to put in some work. You have to kind of get yourself out there and, like I said, put some boots on the ground and like figure it out a little bit and put in some effort on your own part. And that's a big thing, I think, that a lot of people sometimes just aren't really willing to do.
Right. Well, it takes time, too, to do all that.
Yeah, it does. And absolutely.
One quick question I have that's kind of been weighing on my mind. What exactly is involved in a library degree? Like, what kind of classes do you take for that? I realize we're kind of straying from the topic of our conversation, but just my curiosity says, what kind of classes do you have?
So there are, for my particular program, it's 43 credits for the master's, and five of those classes are already spoken for as prerequisites. And then for this particular program, you can either choose to do an e-portfolio or a thesis. And an e-portfolio is very similar to our VTS application.
Okay.
In that I have to write for an entire semester reasons why I have met the 15 competencies that are required for me to graduate from this program. And I have
so that's
to provide,
your skills list?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I have to provide evidence of how I met those competencies and write up, you know, how that will change the way I library.
is that a verb?
It is now.
It is now.
It'll change the way that I go about what I do at work. Based on what I've learned in the program. So that's what I'm going to be doing next semester. And I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm kind of not, because that VTS application was a doozy. I know this is going to be a doozy also.
Yeah.
But class-wise, the rest of the classes you get to kind of pick. So if you're interested in being a librarian for a public school or work in the children's section of a public library, you can go kind of down the path of those types of classes. I have found myself more interested in not so much databases, but data asset management in general. And primarily that's because my big passion is making sure that documents are preserved through digitization. So digitizing paper reports or paper documents or government information and making sure that it's available online, because most people aren't going to drive all the way to Phoenix to look at that one report from the Department of Agriculture in 1945. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, you can be either looking at that report because you're just interested or because you're doing research, which is primarily what our patrons are doing. They're either writing books, they're writing articles, journal articles for history journals. They are history teachers from all over the country. They just have an interest in a particular event. You know, the OK Corral happened here. Everyone is fascinated with that. Or we have a lot of journalists who come in to verify things that are being done in the government. We also have a lot of legislative staff. So Senate research staff will come over and do law research or need access to things very quickly sometimes. Like, we need it in an hour. Yeah. Or we have lawyers that are working cases that also need government information, or when did this law change, or what did it say in 1997, things like that. So we have kind of the governmental researcher in the media and lawyers and legislative staff. But we also have, you know, historians that are looking for information about what happened and who was involved in different events around Arizona. So my job is to digitize a lot of the material that we have, because it's not under copyright, because it is public information, and make that stuff available on our website for people to search that way. So the digital asset management, managing those digital files and making them searchable and making them discoverable is where my passion really is. And so those are the classes that I've been taking, learning how to, you know, work in things like Drupal, create websites, information retrieval systems, things like that. It's a little more computer based than I would have thought, but that's also because that's the choices that I've made and the classes I've taken.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Super nerdy.
Well, I mean, I'd like to think that most of our our listeners are super nerdy.
They're nerdy about something. Let's be
real. They're nerdy about something. Yeah, it may not be that, but they're nerdy about something, so they can appreciate the nerdiness.
Yes.
Brandy, one of the things that we've been talking about a lot on the podcast is mental health, and just the mental health aspects that we have to deal with as technicians. What's the difference between what you're doing now and kind of your mental health status as a veterinary technician? How is that different, and how has that changed for you? I would imagine it's changed for you for the better.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's no emergency digitization that happens.
But what if they need it in an
There's
hour?
There's not a 5 o'clock emergency digitization.
Correct. So that is very much an 8 to 5, 7:30 to 4:30 job. And the work can stay at work. I don't have to bring it home. Obviously, you know, like any job, you come home and talk about your day with your significant other. But I don't have to feel like I shorted something. Or, you know, if you short something in vet med, that could be a patient's life. Or, you know, if you forgot to mention something, that could be detrimental to the patient. That doesn't happen in this new field. I can leave it all at work and then pick it up tomorrow and start over again. There's no urgency to get, I mean, there is a little bit of urgency, but not in the same regards.
Sure.
And
right,
so for
sure.
That in and of itself, just the ability to leave it at home and not have to think about it again is hugely beneficial. I mean, the other part of vet med is that we all have pets. And so you're at home at work all day around pets that are sick and angry and whatever. And then you come home and there's more pets that you have to like manage and feed and clean up after. This, you know, I'm not seeing that same thing all day, all the time. And so my work is very much my work. And then I can come home and be at home.
I would also imagine that you probably don't get friends from high school texting you with library questions like we
You'd
get
be surprised.
With... Oh, really? Yeah.
I actually did just get one of those a couple weeks ago. Because
I was completely kidding.
No, I did. She actually lives here in Phoenix, but we went to high school together in Illinois. And she is a school teacher, and she's working on an assignment for a program she's in. And she was like, "Can you help me find this information?" And I did. So
nice. Yeah.
So that exists no matter what field you're
exactly.
in, I guess.
I guess so, to exactly. some degree. You know, kind of along this question that Dave asked is, you know, a lot of the things that we struggle with as veterinary technicians is not taking a break, or, you know, being short-staffed or having to pick up extra shifts. Like, I would bet your work-life balance and that, and again, as you said, having more of like an 8 to 5 job, like a lot of those things are probably a lot better balanced as well now too, correct?
100%. I mean, this is the first, since I started working for them in 2017, it's the first time I've had holidays off.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, I know I'm going to have Christmas off. I know I'm going to have Thanksgiving off, so we can make plans. And the other thing that's a huge relief, too, is if someone calls out, okay.
yeah, that's true. Gosh.
Like, no one, I mean, the library itself is not like you would imagine a public library where people can just come in and browse. All of our material is in locked, stored storage with climate control, which are called closed stacks. So you have to have a reason to come into the library, and we do take information down because it's also an archive. So if something goes missing, or, you know, we need to maintain a chain of custody, we can do that. So if someone calls out sick, it's not like, oh no, now we're short in this section of the library. There's only ever maybe 2 or 3 people in the room at a time. And so we can just swap out if someone calls out. It's not a big deal. And now that COVID has happened, most of us are working from home. And we're doing most of the research on behalf of our patrons via email and, you know, over the computer instead. So that's a relief that I get to work from home.
Yeah.
Right now as well.
So maybe not necessarily like, you know, obviously a lot of the clinical skills, but from you, maybe your time as a teacher or supervisor or anything along those lines, has there been any transferability of schools between the two fields? Like, is there anything you kind of brought with you, or is it just so different that it's really apples and oranges?
The majority of it is different. I would say that I am the staff veterinary question answerer.
For sure.
I do, you know, I get text messages from my coworkers and stuff on occasion, and that's totally fine. Like, I appreciate that I can do that. There are some transferability of skills, not a ton, but, you know, my colleagues aren't as familiar with medicine as I am, and we don't get a lot of medical-related research, but we have had some. And one that stands out was a state employee who was finishing, I think, her doctorate, and she was going to write up about when the plague arrived in Arizona, and she had a theory on how she thought that it showed up here, but she didn't have, you know, she needed documentation to help, you know, prove her theory. And we have, not only do we contain Arizona's state government documents, but we're also a regional federal depository, so we get copies of every single thing, basically, that the federal government creates. And so one of our storage warehouses is completely full of federal government documents. And in my mind, when that question came through, I knew that my colleagues didn't know, you know, Yersinia pestis was what caused plague. They were just going to search for the plague in our catalog, and not much was coming up. But I also know, which they don't, where who the hosts are, right? Like, it's prairie dogs, it's squirrels, it's, you know, small rodents. And I also was familiar enough with the plague to know what section of Arizona it's most commonly found in. So that helped me triangulate the documents that she would need. And I knew that since the plague was such a zoonotic disease, and that there's been lots of literature written about it over the years, that it would have been a public health concern across the United States, not just in Arizona. So that led me to digging into our federal documents. The problem with our federal documents is that because they've been creating documents from the federal government and its agencies since the government began, computers didn't get started until, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. And so a lot of that stuff is not cataloged, and you literally have to look in a card catalog.
Wow.
To find that stuff. So it takes a lot of time. My medical background really helped me find things that she needed, and she got way more information than she might have otherwise had I not been there. So
super cool.
Yeah, it's not a common thing, but that was a nice case where I could really dig deep and be like, this is what needs to be searched for. My colleagues are going to have no idea, you know, what Yersinia pestis is or vector-borne disease. They don't know that stuff because they weren't trained on that. So
other than being the staff veterinary professional and answering questions about the plague, do you have any involvement in VetMed right now, or just completely in the library field?
I am a lurker on all of the Facebook groups.
Yes.
I am a moderator on Era Vet Tech Rounds still. Okay. So I do that. And then I am a contractor, a part-time contractor for our local veterinary school. That project was put on hold because of COVID. So I'm not actually sure where it stands right now. We were working on some stuff in February, and then, you know, COVID happened and schools started closing. So yeah. I think that project is on pause right now. But it was with a veterinarian at the veterinary school who reached out to me to work on a project with him at that school. So, but yeah, other than that, no.
Just the plague.
Just the plague once in a while. And the questions that I get from my coworkers.
Is there a scenario you've either imagined or that could ever be possible to get you to want to come back to veterinary medicine, or it's best left behind and you're totally happy with what you're doing now?
As guilty as it makes me feel to say it, I'm happy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Having left it behind, there's still, you know, scenarios I could see where I can combine both fields and work in a veterinary college and their library. There also are positions at federal agencies that do require science backgrounds, sometimes specifically veterinary backgrounds. And also, like it's very niche, but like the U.S. Department of Agriculture sometimes is looking for people that have veterinary experience to work in their giant library in Maryland. I'd have to give up living in beautiful Phoenix. So I don't know if I'm ready for that. But
And what are the storms that you... They've got a weird
the
name.
Haboobs.
The haboobs. Yeah.
The dust storms.
Yes. Yeah. Which is just, I mean, you know, not to make such a terrible dad joke, but such a great name for somebody that's had breast cancer that lives in Arizona. I mean, I just couldn't let that one go by. We can edit that out if necessary.
Dave. Nah, we'll leave it in. You know me and dad jokes. I love them.
That's awesome.
So thinking about other technicians that may be kind of at that crossroads that you were at, what kind of advice would you give them for people that are seriously considering making that jump of saying that I need to get out of this field? And not that I want to promote people leaving the field, because right. that's probably the last thing we want, because we need our technicians and we need people,
right.
and good people that can work in the field. But, you know, there are going to be times where vet med is just not the right fit for somebody. And
right.
if your work-life balance is terrible, if you're struggling with cancer, or if you're struggling with finding your way in the field,
yeah.
what kind of advice would you give to somebody that's thinking about leaving, and how would they make that happen?
I think that the first thing that they should really look at is their own educational background. That's the first thing I did. Mm-hmm. I'd always wanted to complete my bachelor's, and I knew I was pretty close. And that was something that I could have done and still stayed in practice, because there are so many online programs now. And I'll toot University of Nebraska's horn again. Like, they have that program where they took all the classes that I had already taken, including my vet tech classes, and turned them into this multidisciplinary bachelor's degree. You know, it doesn't sound like much on a piece of paper, but there are so many jobs for which the minimum requirements are a bachelor's degree in any field. Like, they don't care what it's in. They just want to show you, you know, they just want you to show them that you have an education of some sort and a four-year degree.
Yeah.
So that would be the first thing. Look at programs, try to finish up your bachelor's. If you're interested in a master's, look into it. Like, they're all online, especially now with COVID.
Yeah, everything's online now.
Yeah, and there's such a range in prices. You know, U of A here has a great library school program, and it is online. However, it's like double the price of what San Jose State was. So while it would have been great to stay in state, it was cheaper for me to go out of state. So do some research if, you know, your degree is something that you want to complete. And then I think in doing that, it kind of opens your eyes to other things that you might enjoy learning about that you may have forgotten or didn't realize you enjoyed. And then I would also say, if there is something that you're another career that you're kind of eyeballing, volunteer or shadow. I know it sounds weird for an adult to go shadow somewhere, but I think that's the best way to see if the day-to-day job is something that you could fall in love with. And when I first started down this path of librarianship, in my head, it was, I'm going to work at a public library. I'm going to make sure people know how to find information. I'm going to share my favorite books with the people that come in. And that's not at all what, you know, my career has turned into. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because I really, really enjoy what I'm doing. And honestly, what I do can be translated into working for a Fortune 500 company and making some decent money for once. because the stuff that I do is used by IT a lot.
Yeah.
So just, look at your education, see if you can complete that if it's not done already, and then volunteer at a few places, even if it's, you know, a soup kitchen, or see what else is out there and see what sparks some joy. That's the thing, right? Like, it feels kind of joyless after a while being in a vet clinic and getting exhausted from it all the time. So finding something that sparks that joy again. And what I always told people that worked for me is, if you're going to volunteer and still work full time, don't volunteer for the Humane Society. Don't volunteer for the spay neuter clinic. And I'm probably going to get some, you know, flack for saying that, but you already spend so much time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Around animals and sick animals and people that are struggling to, you know, care for their pets. Why would you do that to yourself?
Right.
Yeah.
Outside of that, and for free.
Yeah.
Since we already basically do it for free.
Yeah. That's a fantastic point.
Well, and you kind of bring up a good point of, you know, to do something like that, if you're going to have that discussion within yourself of, do I want to leave this field, and kind of going through that process of, I'm going to volunteer here and I'm going to volunteer here and go back to school and all that stuff. You know, one of the big obstacles I think that we have as technicians is that to do all that stuff, we still have to be able to live, right? And we still have to make an income. So to do some of that stuff can be really difficult, especially on a technician's salary.
Absolutely.
To try and do that. And you know, Jeff and I have both met your husband. And
it's,
I know. We call him handsome.
Yeah, we can just call him handsome.
but he has a job that, that kind of allowed you to do that.
100%.
Yeah, so I guess that's kind of the hard part for some of us technicians. If we don't have, you know, a significant other that can afford us to say, I'm going to spend the next year going back to school, that can
absolutely
be very, really difficult to do.
Yeah, he was very supportive of that. And, you know, I still was working part-time with Penn Foster while I went to school and even into when I was working for the state briefly. But yeah, I'm extremely lucky in the support that he is able to provide. And, you know, we do try to make sure we can give back in that regards wherever we, you know, wherever we can, because we know that we are very lucky and that a lot of people aren't in that situation. And neither of us were affected by any of this COVID stuff other than he doesn't have to travel, which affects me a little bit.
Yeah.
When are you leaving, honey?
Don't you have some place to go to?
I'm just kidding. I enjoy having him around. It's been nice. But yeah, I definitely understand that that is a struggle, especially for, you know, emergency technicians, because we don't have a set schedule ever.
No.
Like, if you can tell me I'm working 3 to 3, but that's not going to be true.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get off till 8. And now whatever I plan to do during the day is not going to happen because I'm going to sleep.
Yeah. Right.
So 100%. It's very difficult. And, you know, suburban versus urban versus rural areas also, you know, determine what opportunities you have.
Right. So, you know, obviously I know you haven't necessarily been working in a clinic setting or that for the last few years, but honestly, unfortunately, in veterinary medicine, not much has changed in the 5 years that you've been out of it. And as you said earlier, you are a self-proclaimed lurker in the Facebook group. What would you say, or maybe not the biggest, but one big one that comes to mind for you, a biggest obstacle technicians in this field face? What do you think, if there was maybe one thing you could change or make better, what's that one obstacle that you think is the biggest one that's out there?
I mean, I think
there's so many.
I know there is so many, and they all kind of come back to, they all kind of circle each other, I guess. You know, obviously pay is a huge, huge problem. If we could make double what we make, which wouldn't be much, then I think a lot of people would feel better about how difficult the job is, because they also don't come home and struggle with paying the bill after the fact, you know, or their bills after the fact. But then that also comes from, you know, the uptick in the number of corporate practices, you know, that are purchasing all the mom and pops there. And if those corporate practices become the norm and they're not willing to pay, I don't know who they think is going to work for them. At, you know, at some point, everyone's going to get just be completely incapable of paying their bills. Like, bills are going to go up and pay does not. So I think that would take a lot of relief off of technician shoulders and just veterinary professionals in general.
Right.
If that could just be overcome. I think one of the things that seems, at least in my eyes, to be improving is that newer grads do seem to appreciate more what technicians can do and bring to the table. I mean, when I started in veterinary clinics, it was a lot of, you know, older veterinarians out there that you were just there to hold the dog while they did all the things.
Mm-hmm. You were a warm body.
Yeah, you were just a warm body, and they certainly weren't going to spend time teaching anything, because why?
Right.
You know, like, I definitely work some doctors like that, but I've seen that change, and it seems like relationships between doctors and the technicians themselves is a little bit better than it used to be, and that's definitely a good thing, because I think in the long run that could possibly help the pay situation. But
yeah,
I think that's the biggest hurdle. The pay is so difficult to live off of.
And you talk about the cyclical nature of that. You know, fixing the pay fixes so many other things, because if we're all making $30 an hour,
right,
everyone's going to want that job, right?
Right.
And that's going to reduce burnout. It's going to reduce compassion fatigue. It's going to reduce having to work overtime, because those shifts are going to be filled because there's people that want to make $30 an hour. So,
right,
you know, I mean, you bring up the cycle of it,
In the big picture, if we all make more money, then more money gets put into the economy. Like, I just don't understand why this isn't obvious to the powers that be when it comes to things like minimum wage. I was reading a story. I forget what it was about. There was a job position open in a library, like back home in Indiana. And I was like, oh, that sounds kind of fun. And I looked at it and it was like $9 an hour. No, it was like $8.79 an hour. And I was like, what?
Oh, wow.
Like, that's under minimum wage. Like, are you kidding me? Like, no way. So I looked it up.
Might as well advertise it as a volunteer.
I know. So I looked it up and I was like, I didn't realize that the federal government hadn't changed the minimum wage to above seven. I mean, federal minimum wage is $7.25.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was seven and a quarter. Yikes.
Yeah. Like, that's what it was when I was in high school.
Yeah.
I think. I mean,
I would say it's at least since the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely since the 90s. I mean, when I first started working, it was $4.50, I think. But like, who in their right mind can live in this day and age on essentially $15,000 a year? Nobody. And that's under the poverty level, for one thing. So how is that a minimum wage if it's way below poverty level? And the fact that, you know, states then have to make the laws that the federal government can't make is also frustrating. I think that's where I was confused. I was like, well, minimum wage here is 11 and you know, Washington is 15. You know, I don't know the exact specifics, but to realize that there are places that can still pay you $8 an hour for a full-time job is just embarrassing. And then you think about what technicians make, and it's really not much more than that. So if we could just, you know, if everyone just got paid more, then there's more money for the economy. People can pay their student loans. Like, I don't understand. You know, I get that businesses are like, well, then we can't afford the staff. Well, yeah, you can, because now everyone can afford to come to you.
Yeah.
Right.
And get their pets treated or, you know, buy the TV or what. Like, the economy improves if we're all making more money.
Solving that's national problems here on the Vet Tech Cafe.
That's right. I'm running for office. No, I'm not.
we're getting around about an hour. So, Brandy, is there anything that we have not discussed tonight that you want to get out to our listeners or our Vet Tech caffeinators?
I don't think so, other than, like, we just need to be kind to each other. I think that was the other thing that kind of drove me out, was other than my, you know, cycle of peeps, just seeing how, or my circle of peeps, not my cycle of peeps, my circle of peeps, you know, just watching coworkers and the way some doctors would treat technicians and trying to sabotage so that that person, like, it's just ridiculous. There's plenty of room for all of us. Really, there's plenty of room. So, like, watching that was just so disheartening. Yeah. You know, like, and at every level of the profession, not just, you know, kennel technicians and high schoolers, but like grown people, it was very disheartening to see that. Everyone just needs to be kinder to each other. No one's trying to tape it, you know, catheter in too hard. That's not anyone's goal. You know, like, give each other the benefit of the doubt, give each other a break. We're all struggling with this job. So let's lift each other up instead, I think would be the most important thing. Because I know I enjoyed being able to do that for you guys and watching you guys do that for other people as well.
Yeah.
Excellent take-home message.
Yeah. Thanks. I think we found our quote. All right. Well, we're not done just yet. We still have one more question. The Vet Tech Cafe Would You Rather question. Are you ready for it?
I am.
Okay. We had a couple today, and Jeff wanted to go with his first one. So, would you rather be able to tell any person from the past one singular thing about the future, or be able to ask someone from the future one thing about what's to come?
Oh, one thing I would rather ask somebody from the future.
Really? Why?
Because I need to know what's coming. Like, I need to know what's going to happen on November, you know, 13th and 12th. And, you know, I need to know what's going to happen. Yeah, I would rather know what to expect than to, I mean, I guess the point of asking somebody or telling somebody something in the past would be to change the course.
Possibly change of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But and there's that butterfly effect.
Right. Right. And I don't feel confident that that would happen. But
you would tell them the right thing.
Yeah, exactly. But having a, you know, a sneak peek as to what is to come so that I can prepare for whatever may come. I would much rather do that. What a good question.
Well, even in that way, you could you could be that person from the past,
right?
Because if somebody tells you something that's about to happen, that could be the butterfly effect where you change the course of what's to happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
Could be.
Exactly.
No wrong answers in the would you rather.
No wrong answers.
Right? It's like looking in the mirror on either side of you, right? Like it goes in infinity in both directions.
Infinity, yeah.
Right. Well, Brandy, it was wonderful to hear your voice and to hear your thoughts on so many of these topics because, again, so many technicians, we get messages all the time. There's people that are kind of at the same crossroads place and thinking about going in a different direction and, you know, just ultimately a little nervous about taking that leap. And, you know, so it's really
change
great
is hard.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. So it's really good to hear, you know, somebody that we know that's gone through this and, you know, is happy with their decision. And it's a really good perspective to have. And so thank you so much for taking some time out and coming by to chat with us for a little while. We really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Go ahead.
I was going to say, thinking about your guilt, you know, you say you had guilt for leaving the field, and to a person, I guarantee you in your circle of peeps, every single one of us is happy for you and proud of you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Don't feel
guilt.
Okay,
don't make me cry at the end.
Okay, okay. There's no crying in the podcast.
Thank you. That makes me very happy.
Yeah.
And okay. I'm always... You know, you guys know me. I'm always willing to talk to other people that are going through the similar thing. So people can reach out to me if they, you know, want to. And of course, there's a group on Facebook of people just like me.
Really?
Yeah. And some other people that you guys know very well that have struggled with this very thing and have considered leaving. I mean, there are some VTS ECCs that have left.
Oh, I'm in that group.
I think you are actually.
Yeah, I am. I am in that group.
But yeah,
I haven't seen a post in a while. That's probably why I'm like, oh, what is this?
Yeah, there's like three or four BTS ECCs in that group, and they have left. So I'm not the only one. Yeah. But
okay, all right, cool. Well, thanks again so much for your time. It was wonderful to hear your voice and chat with you for a little while, and especially since I'm headed out to the West Coast in about a month or so. I hope get to see you at some point.
Yes,
soon.
Let's go see some spring training games if nothing else. Have a beer like we used to when
absolutely.
You would come watch the races.
Good times.
Absolutely. Sounds good. I can't wait.
Yay. Thank you guys. I appreciated it and I love hearing your voices.
Thank you. Thanks everybody for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe. Have a good day, everybody.
Bye guys.
We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. We often talk about difficult issues facing our profession and chat with colleagues who have strong opinions of those issues. As such, we feel it is important to note that the opinions and views expressed by us as the hosts or our guests on the Vet Tech Cafe podcast are solely theirs and theirs alone, and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity. If you have questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. Lastly, as Dave said during the intro, please like us, follow us, and take a minute to rate and review the Vet Tech Cafe podcast on whatever podcast platform you use. It really does help. Thanks again for stopping by the Vet Tech Cafe.